Did you know that intimate partner violence increases by 12% in summer?
Crap. Can't we be decreasing violence?
Some local heroes are working on that.
We'll learn more about domestic violence and teen media use and digital exploitation from a local nonprofit we all treasure. Next on Loving the Springs, where we celebrate the best of Manitou and Colorado Springs and elevate the rest.
This is Studio 809 Podcasts, informing, connecting, and empowering the residents of the Pikes Peak region.
I'm Dave Gardner.
I'm Carrie Simison.
And I'm Al Brody.
We are recording July 31st, 2026 in the beautiful Studio 809 Community Podcast Studio at The Next Us, a professional cooperative environment for small businesses in downtown Colorado Springs.
We're joined in the studio by Ann Markley, CEO of TESA, a Colorado-based nonprofit focused on supporting survivors and preventing violence. Thanks for your work, Ann, and thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us about TESA and what you do in the community in 25,000 words or less.
Whew, I could talk all day about what we do. For the past almost 50 years, TESA has been serving our local community, El Paso and Teller County, supporting individuals impacted by domestic violence, sexual assault, stalking, and human trafficking. And we do so through a variety of services. We're really known for our Safe House program. We are the only confidential safe house in all of El Paso and Teller County. And actually, just in fact, in the past year, we expanded into Douglas County and do operate the Safe House in Douglas County as well. So we're able to provide that immediate safety for individuals escaping high lethality situations, to be able to provide them with a place to rest their head, to take a little weight off their shoulders and breathe and be able to move into those next steps. And then from there, our other programs are, we have a housing program where we can help to support people with rental and utilities assistance over a stair set period of time while we move them towards self-sufficiency. We also have a clinical program where individuals and group therapy can happen for both adults and children. So those are processing groups. Those are groups that just help with coping strategies. And again, both for youth and children, we do have play therapy for youth as well. Outside of that, we have a youth and children's program specifically that really works with kiddos who are either the primary victim or secondary victim to violence in their home. And we work with residential and non-residential kiddos to be able to provide a sense of normalcy. We work with their schools to be able to make sure they can still go to school safely. What does transportation look like? Helping figure out childcare that a parent might need to be able to figure out. And doing a lot of just fun for the kids too. So we do kids clubs, we do trunk or treats, we do summer camps, we do winter camps, spring break camps, we take field trips, we do cooking clubs, we do all kinds of things just to give kids the opportunity to be kids when their life has really been thrown asunder. And so those are really some of the big programs that we have. In addition, we also have a legal program. We operate out of the district attorney's office. We're there 5 days a week to be able to provide temporary and permanent protection support, as well as family law support. So we help people represent themselves pro se for family law matters. And then we have an advocate at Memorial Hospital Central downtown in the Forensic Center of Excellence to be able to meet people in their moment of crisis in the hospital when they're coming in to meet with the forensic nurse examiners. We're there to be able to walk alongside them through that journey as well.
That sounds like you need a staff of thousands, and I get the feeling you don't have that.
We do not have a staff of thousands. Fortunately, we have a lot of volunteers that help too, but we actually do have a pretty robust staff. We have 47 full-time staff members.
Wow.
And in addition to that, we have hundreds of volunteers from our community that do come in. They can go through a confidential victim advocacy training that we offer 2 times a year that allows them to have that ability to work directly with clients and support. Because yes, funds are continuing to diminish, but the work is still there, and we need to be able to support the survivors in our community however we can. And also working with our local universities, we do internship programs through our local universities. And so we're really able to bolster our support for our local survivors with college students as well.
I have 3 things I want to say in response to that. One is, I think you must have hit 30,000 words.
I probably went over it.
But they were good words.
Yeah. 2, it is really amazing. I had no idea that you did all of that. And 3, I am so sorry and sad that we need all that.
Mm-hmm. It is. And unfortunately, I think that try as we might, we don't see a decrease. We just don't. As our community grows, obviously, so do problems. I say all the time that Colorado Springs is not the little city it used to be. We're becoming a big city with big city problems. And with growth, we do tend to see more things coming about. And the stressors in the world are a little bit different now, and those certainly have an impact on people that are already experiencing some sort of unhealthy undercurrent within a relationship.
And you see a bump in summer. Why is that?
We do see a bump in summer, very slight, but there is a bump in summer. It can be attributed to a number of factors. I think sometimes people like to say just the heat sort of makes us all feel a little uneasy, right? So if you think about things like that, we're maybe more indoors together. Kids are home. Kids shouldn't be a stressor for us, but for some people, that is an additional stressor when everybody is in the home together. And so those factors coming in, again, to a relationship that already is unhealthy or might already have some dynamics of power and control, those extra things that hit us in the summer can increase what we see within violence.
I gotta know this. So in 2015, I got involved in car safety, and Colorado said, we're going to do Vision Zero, which was we're going to get to zero traffic fatalities by 2050. Since 2015, things have actually gotten significantly worse. Is that the case with violence? It's not just growing as more population, that the rate is actually increasing.
We have certainly seen an increase in the rate. And I think when we really started to see it again was during COVID. And if you think about that, during that period of time, we were forced into isolation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we were seeing very exacerbated instances of violence because you were forced into isolation with your partner. The power and control was more constant. You didn't have the ability to have a cool off period. So we were seeing a real increased level of violence within the home. And I would say that that has not particularly decreased since then. It certainly is a more increase in the type of violence that we're seeing.
And what are we seeing?
It is just a lot of that isolation. The level of physical violence that we're seeing has increased. Very extreme cases of physical violence.
Is there an age group? Like Gen Z doesn't drink alcohol. Seriously. They have other ways of dealing with things, but alcohol sales are way down. Mm-hmm. Is that the demographic that's an issue, or is it evenly distributed?
It is really evenly distributed. It runs the gamut of age, of race, of sex. We see it everywhere. It really doesn't matter. Wow. And I think what we're seeing more, and I know we're going to talk about more today too, is that we're seeing a lot more teen dating violence than we used to. And that's been something really interesting to start really diving into a little bit more, is the amount of unhealthy relationships that our teens are now in.
I wouldn't have thought that was even a thing.
Mm-hmm. Right? So I'm in this work because very many moons ago, when I was in high school myself, I had a dear friend who was in a very controlling relationship as a 16, 17-year-old. And at the time, it just wasn't something we talked about. And I think we all thought, maybe, I don't know, maybe this is normal. This is our first relationship. We don't know what to expect. Our parents seem good, but maybe this is how things start. Maybe this is the way this looks. And we didn't know. There wasn't education out there for us. And so now where I sit in this chair today is that I had that experience. We didn't know where to turn. We didn't have education. And so now for me, being able to really look at it as a mom of two teenagers and say, this is something our teens are facing and have been facing for a number of years, but we kind of finally have some language to put around it and how we can support them and how we can work to prevent this has really come full circle for me in the work that I do.
And this is by no means new, but our world is so much bigger now where before it was AOL and everything, you basically just knew the people in your school, you knew the people in your neighborhood, you knew the people in your town, your parents knew the people in your school, your neighborhood, your town. And with the invent and obviously takeover of the internet, all of a sudden people from 1,200, 12,000 miles away, and that kind of relationship and abuse can start in a digital relationship with someone you've never met, and your parents then have obviously never met them.
Right. And you know them in quotes.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a very interesting dynamic for sure that we're seeing in our teens. And they consider these to be strong relationships with people they've never met.
Yeah, you're in love.
Right.
Yeah. Speaking of that topic, you have a special event coming up that really ties in to youth in the digital age?
We do. On August 23rd, from 4 to 7 in the evening, we are hosting an event along with Colorado Springs Police Department's Internet Crimes Against Children Unit. And we are bringing in some guest speakers from TikTok and Roblox, as well as a keynote speaker who experienced exploitation herself is going to be able to come and share. And we're really hoping to reach our community, our parents, our educators, anyone who has any interactivity with youth, to come to this event. It's free. And learn, how can we support? What is going on? What are our kids seeing? What are they being exposed to? Even the most educated of us can't keep up with what our kids are seeing. And so to be able to just really dive deep into this topic and get the tools to then know how to be able to see what they're experiencing, how to be able to support them, how to help in prevention efforts, how to get help if they do experience some sort of exploitation or some sort of unhealthy dynamic online. Those are all the types of things that we're going to be working on that evening. And it's going to be held at the Ent Center for the Arts.
Usually we're pretty lighthearted here, but but I think this is the most critical, vital thing we've ever talked about in all of our podcasts, that people should really go to this if you have kids.
I think if you have kids or have any interactivity with kids,
yes,
even community members that just want to know, even as adults, we can fall victim to these things online. So really, it's an informational event for all of us to become more educated and what is out there and what can we do and what we should be looking for.
So it's free.
It is free.
Do people need to register?
So there is going to be a registration. You can go to our website, which is tessacs.org, and there will be a link there to register just to get an idea of how many people are going to come. It's not necessary. You can still come without having registered, but it is completely free event. We did receive some generous funding to be able to do this, and Wings Credit Union, formerly Ent, did donate the space to us as well to be able to use for it. So we're grateful to them for that.
Wings, they're such a great community partner.
Oh, they're such a great community partner of ours.
Yeah, I'm so glad to know you have such a robust education and prevention program. Although prevention, I'm tempted to say, how's that going? But it's not, is it?
So when we go into the schools, we talk to the kids. We are in all of our schools, basically in El Paso and Teller County, and now Douglas as well. This past year, we saw over 11,000 individual youth in our local community and did that prevention education. So that looks like healthy relationships, boundaries, consent, bullying, stress and mental health and coping strategies. We go into schools or any youth serving organization and present these presentations interactively with our youth. When we go in, we kind of get a temperature gauge with the kids before. What do you know about these things? Where are we? And then we check back in after, and where are we now? And do you have the tools? And I think for us, what we see that's really our governor to know this is working is when a teen comes up to us after the presentation and says, that's happening to me. And that's when we know we're making a difference, because we were there in that moment when they needed someone. They didn't know that that's what they were experiencing, and now they've reached out and asked for help. And I think that's how we know that we're reaching our youth. Other kids are hearing us. They're then able to talk to their friends. They're able to share the message. They're able to start being able to support their friends, their peers within school. And I think that's how we know we're making a difference. Unfortunately, we are always going to have violence. But it's, again, giving them the tools to recognize where they are in their relationship, how to be able to help themselves, how to be able to help others, and trying to stop that cycle before it starts.
Is there a specific place you would pour more resources if you could?
That's a great question. I do certainly think right now for us, prevention is a big piece. And if I could have all the money in the world to be able to reach more youth, that's very important to me.
So youth outreach.
Youth outreach is very important to us because we want to be able to stop this cycle. A lot of the schools we're in, we are working with kids who already are, like I just indicated, in a home where there is. So we're then coming in sort of after the fact as a supportive party. But if we could start reaching our youth, which we're doing in our elementary schools, we go in and we just talk about healthy friendships. What's it like to be a good friend? What's it like to have a good friend? Just laying that foundation. And then if we could continue to build on that year after year as our kids grow, I think we would really create healthier communities with our children.
And can volunteers help with that?
Volunteers can. Mm-hmm. So again, through that confidential victim advocacy training, people can come into that. And once they do the training, they can say, well, I feel more pulled to youth and children's, or I'd like to be able to volunteer at the hospital, or whatever really ties into what they feel a pull towards doing. But youth and children's is absolutely an opportunity for volunteers to help us. And again, as we said earlier, knowing that funds are very limited, I only do have so many people in my outreach program to be able to reach these 11,000 students. I mean, I had 3 people that did that last year. Wow. You can imagine how hard these 3 people are working,
right?
But they love it. They love having that time with our kids because they're our future, as we all know. I mean, it's kind of cliche to say, but they are. And for us to be able to give them this support is everything.
So I'll reach out to our listeners. If we had 3 more people, we would actually
double
your
outreach.
Exactly.
Outreach.
Just exactly. Need 3.
Our timing is interesting talking to you today. As we were just chatting before the show, we were both at the Jelly Roll concert last night. And really a big theme with him was breaking the generational cycles, whether that was drug abuse or violence. It sucks, but it's awesome to have a national figure talking about that so publicly, talking about it as part of his concert when you're out there to listen to some country rock or whatever, and you actually have someone talking about that. And it seems to really tie into especially this program that you guys have with meeting the kids where they are and letting them know that just because it happened with grandma, just because it happens with mom and dad, there's a way out of it.
There is a way out of it. And when he brought that up during the concert, it just really gave me a moment of pause and gave me the chills because I thought, gosh, how everybody needs to hear that. And like you said, having it be somebody who's on a national stage and has a platform to be able to say that, it really did. I thought, oh my gosh, I hope that the youth in this room, and I hope the adults are hearing this too, to know you still have an opportunity to help your kids too.
And it's never too late for anyone. You might be 58 years old and in that kind of relationship, and you can get out and you can make sure that the other family members, whether they're children, sisters, brothers, et cetera, don't have to experience it or don't have to continue to experience it.
And I think it's really important, too, to note that you need to do it when you're ready to, on your timing. And so to your point, if you've lived this for a very long time, it's okay that you've never been ready. There are so many reasons for why people stay in relationships that are unhealthy. And we work towards trying to empower and educate so that people realize their value and they at some point see, okay, now I'm ready and this is a step I want to take, and it's not a step somebody else is telling me to take. But it's giving those little nuggets over time of information and knowledge and support that when they're ready to take that step, they do. And that's so important to everything that we do, is that empowerment-based model. And I think as members of the community too, if you come in contact with somebody who is in an unhealthy relationship, whether it is a youth or an adult, just being able to say to them, I believe you and I'm here to support you, but not tell them what to do, is what's so important, because their choices have been taken away for so long. And so being able to just say, here's some options, here's some places you can go for help, and when you're ready, take that step. And it's okay if it takes a while.
Do you have some kind of training for people who just might have a friend who you're tempted to nudge firmly, mm-hmm. but you need some training so that you know the right things to do?
I always suggest people, if you have a situation like that, you can always call into our safe line just as a friend of a friend and be able to talk to an advocate and say, I've got a friend that's going through this. What do you suggest? How could I talk to them? There's always an advocate on the other end of our safe line 24/7 that can talk you through that. Again, the trainings that we offer 2 times a year, those are certainly helpful. We do go into a lot of workplaces in town too and provide education to workplaces to be able to arm individuals within your workplace with the knowledge of, okay, if I'm starting to see something in my coworker or they disclose something to me, how can I respond to that? So some of our bigger employers in town have us come in and do those trainings again for free for them. And so that's always a great opportunity that you can provide to your staff. I always say, we don't want to normalize domestic violence, obviously, but to normalize the conversation around it, to feel like we don't have to hide behind a closed door and be ashamed. We can talk about this openly and help each other get support that we need. And so normalizing the conversation, arming more people with the knowledge, however that may be, is really a goal.
I think that's the kind of growth we finally are seeing in the community in general is talking about things that have been taboo for so long. Domestic violence, women's reproductive health, mental health issues. Mm-hmm. I mean, they always seem to be, whether it was what you watched on TV or what you lived, like stuff that got swept under the table. It happened behind closed doors. You covered up a bruise with as much makeup as you could, et cetera. And again, the fact that we have to talk about it is the worst part, but the fact that we finally are making humans a priority and humans' lives a priority across all of the various issues that have been hidden for so long, I think does show growth in us as humanity that we don't want this to continue. And so the first step, obviously, is knowledge.
And removing that shame factor, because everybody feels so shameful. How did I let this happen to me? The same with mental health, that shame factor around it. Oh, gosh, I shouldn't need help. I should be stronger than this. But removing that piece of things and just like you said, being able to say, we're human and we have these experiences and we can recognize this and we can help each other.
And something you said a little while back, the I believe you, that's, I think, got to be one of the most important things because, again, with it being hidden so long and just particular facets of society, people haven't been believed. Oh, you're blowing it up or it's all in your head or what did you do? And so just those simple words, I believe you, really opens a door if someone's ready to talk about it. Or even if they're not, just to have that in the back of their head that finally someone didn't say, ah, it's not happening.
Right. Because you might be the first person that that person decided to disclose something to. And so you're helping to chart what they choose to do from that point forward. Mm-hmm. And so being able to have those first words be, I hear you, I believe you, I'm here for you. Then they know, okay, like they took that step and they feel a little bit more confident in having done that. And you might be the first and only person they ever choose to tell. And how you respond to them is crucial.
How long have you been at the helm of TESSA?
I have been there for 7 years.
And prior to that, you sound like you must have had 24 years of education and training.
Prior to my role that I'm in now, I was on the board of directors for about 8 years and did come from a background in education of human development, family studies, and really had dove into family dynamics and things like that, and then got my master's degree actually in business. So the two combined has worked very well in the role that I'm in, having an understanding of the human and of the business side of things has been really good.
Something tells me you've got a great heart too. That's quite apparent.
This has been enlightening, but we wouldn't be complete without asking, what do you really love about Colorado Springs?
I just love our community. I do. I feel I have, like I indicated earlier, for the most part, grew up here. I moved here from the South when I was in middle school.
And no and accent.
I lost it, and it's always been devastating.
Oh, you wish you still had it? I was going to congratulate
you. I do wish I still had it, actually.
More specific, where in the South?
I was born and raised in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Ooh, red stick.
And then lived in Houston, Texas for a while before moving here, and my mom was an educator.
That's what did it.
Y'all is still here all the time, though. I will never get rid of the use of y'all.
It's pretty handy.
My mom was an educator in the South, and at the time, it was really becoming dangerous, actually, in Texas. And so we moved here just for, to me, to be able to have a new beginning and not have to go into Houston for high school and the crime rate and everything that was there at the time. So we moved to the mountains and settled here. And I love our community. I do think even as we grow, I still feel a sense of community. I still do feel an overall sense of safety here. I feel like I don't go anywhere where I don't know someone. And so it's a small, big town. And I feel like we have a really good community of giving people. And that's evident in the nonprofit world. We have so many nonprofits here in Colorado Springs that do amazing work. And there's some place for everyone to find a place to be able to give back to whatever they're passionate about. And we have so many people that have passions to give back in ways to our community. And so I think that shows me just the way that we have nonprofits, the way that we work together, the way that our community comes forward to support us is really something that I love about Colorado Springs, is just seeing how we all generally have a heart to do good things for Colorado Springs and for our neighbors.
When I moved here years and years and years and years and years ago, it took me maybe 10 years to get settled and make Colorado Springs feel like home. And I can actually pinpoint what it was. And it was when I was able to start working with and meeting people that ran and worked for nonprofits. And I realized how much first of all, how many people there were. I mean, I can't even, we're like the nonprofit capital of the world,
absolutely.
I believe.
Yeah.
But how many people worked so hard every single day, a lot of times as volunteers or a lot of times not for a very big salary, just pouring their energy into all of the things that the nonprofits do, human services, recreation, art, and meeting that group of individuals really changed my mindset about Colorado Springs and made it feel like community and made it feel like home.
Yeah, that's definitely how I feel too. And I continue to see it daily. And I'm always encouraged just by the way that we can all work together to make our community a better place.
Yeah. That was a great answer. So to summarize what we've learned today, class, we've got digital realities, protecting youth in the digital age, August 23rd, 4 to 7 p.m. Mm-hmm. at the Ann Center for the Arts, free. Head to tessacs.org to get more information or register. You've also got Bleeding Hearts Night at Goat Patch Brewing, October 13th. I think you've got one of those coming up.
We do. Domestic Violence Awareness Month is in October, so you will see us a lot throughout the community during the month of October doing a lot of those similar types of events like Goat Patch. We're so grateful to them for the way that they do those Bleeding Heart Nights to support the community and, again, just raise that awareness.
And will you be a part of the Give campaign?
We are a part of the Give campaign every year, yes.
Okay, so that'll
and
be coming
And empty stocking
up.
As well.
And if someone needs help from Tessa, how do they reach out?
We have a 24/7 safe line at 719-633-3819. There is always someone on the other side of the phone to answer that, a victim advocate to be able to help you. You don't have to be in crisis in that moment. You can be. You just can call and say, I just have a question. Is this normal? Or you can be in crisis and we can help you navigate that. We can safety plan. We have a main office location down on the Myron Stratton campus. Mm-hmm. That is open Monday through Friday, 7:30 to 4:30, Friday, 7:30 to noon. You do not need an appointment. That's just walk-in services. You never need an appointment for anything with Tessa. And everything we do is free. On our website as well at tessacs.org, there is a safe and confidential chat. So if it isn't safe for you to pick up the phone and make a phone call, we're all always on our phones texting anyways, right? That's what we're going to be talking about in digital realities. But you can pick up the phone and just text us. And it just, to anyone else, would just look like you're texting. And there's a safe escape on that as well. So you can escape that. And then it'll just take you to a browser. So no one will know where you were if you were chatting with us.
Yeah, I thought that safe escape button on the website was pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. Shows you've
it's
very thoughtful
crucial.
About it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can you explain how that works, what that's for?
Yep. If somebody is on our website and is doing any type of research, looking into services support for themselves, or is having a chat, if somebody that is unsafe to them is to come around, they can hit that safe escape button. It exits them out of the site immediately, and then it's not showing where they had been.
Wow. Very thoughtful. I wouldn't have thought of that. Yeah. There's a donate button there.
There is a donate button as well. Again, back to the funding, we can always use monetary support. What's nice for those that donate from our community, those are unrestricted dollars for us. So many of our grants tell us what we have to do down to the very last penny. So when money comes in from our community, we can use that for the greatest need at any given time. And so we appreciate any amount that comes in, $5, $10, $25, thousands, all of those dollars go directly into serving our survivors through our Safe House program to provide food, to provide additional things they might need to be able to move forward, and do also go into supporting our education and prevention as well.
And what time of the year are your two volunteer training?
We do those one during the summer and one in the winter. So they're usually June, July timeframe and around January timeframe.
Okay.
And the more information on that is available on our website. You can send an email to us and look into being able to do that training as well. And as I had mentioned with workforces or anything like that, there's contact us forms on our website that anyone that would be interested in having us come out and speak to your workplace, you can do that there. Schools that want us to come out, you can request that from our website as well. All of that is there to be able to connect with us for any need we might be able to fulfill. And I think it's really important, too, to know that maybe you're seeing something in your workplace or your school that you don't know if it's something we can help with. You know what? Give us a call. We have put together presentations on the fly for a school that has said, this is the problem we're having. Can you come and talk about this? We sure can. So you just let us know and we'll collaborate with you.
So push the buttons. If you haven't pushed the safe button, push that button. And then donate. Push that button too.
Yes, please.
Well, and you and the 46 other staff members and the hundreds of volunteers, you really are true community heroes. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us and for helping to shed some light on what we're doing.
We have a little bit of community news to talk about, and that is parking.
Parking.
Yeah.
Parking. Tell us, Dave.
Apparently, we're getting upgrades to make parking more convenient with tap to pay, text to pay options, the Park Mobile app, and modern pay stations, parking meters are going away or they're already gone on parts of Tejon. So we're entering the 21st
century. For us older people, when you take away a parking meter, I think the parking meter is gone. Not that I have to pay a different way.
And you didn't have to get out a saw and saw down that parking meter like Paul Newman had to in Cool Hand Luke. So we're keeping up with Manitou, I think, is what that means.
Yeah, we hear a lot about parking downtown. I know people can be frustrated because they have to pay for parking. But at the end of the day, it is really a great thing. If you think about a really compact, busy place like downtown, we've got more than 140 bars, restaurants, coffee shops, more than 70 shops and galleries. So that much commerce that's happening on top of all of the apartment buildings and all of the employers downtown. If parking was just a free-for-all, you can imagine that everyone that worked from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. at any of those shops would pull into the parking spot in front of their shop, go in for the day, and that spot would be taken up for 8 hours. Yeah. And really what we want is people to come and go. We want people to come, grab a cup of coffee and a bagel, do a little bit of shopping, and then get in their car and maybe move down the road to another part of downtown or go about their day. And so what the paid parking does is guarantee that either you're going to do that or after your time runs out, you're going to go back and plug it again. And parking enterprise is not a money-making enterprise. All of the money that goes into the parking meters and everything goes back into providing services. They don't profit. And what I really hope people become more accustomed to do is, especially in a place like downtown that we're trying to build and make more walkable every day, it's part of the mission of what we do at the Downtown Partnership, is like, you might not get to park directly in front of the place you're going into, but that's okay. As long as you're abled, the 1 square mile of downtown, we're hoping that you'll park and then walk down the street, because I guarantee it, even if you've been downtown a week ago, certainly if it's been 6 months since you've been downtown, or some people say they haven't been down since before COVID, if you park and walk down Tejon or walk down Bijou or walk down Kiowa or go over to the trolley block, I guarantee you are going to walk by a shop or a restaurant or something that you did not know existed.
Yeah.
And more than 90% of our downtown street level businesses are independently owned. So these are your neighbors and your friends and their dreams that have popped open in our shopping and economic district. And by you parking 2.5 blocks away on your way to grab lunch at Urban Egg, you're going to pass a whole bunch of places that hopefully you'll want to go back in because there's something super cool in their window. The signage is awesome. Or you're just like, what on earth is that? I've never heard of that name before.
And did you feel like there was a parking genie in a bottle? And we just let her out.
It is one thing. People, I mean, as Colorado Springs was smaller, we're really used to being able to pull up in front of Poor Richard's, go into Poor Richard's, buy a book and a cup of coffee and head out. And as we've grown to a metropolis of 700,000 people, you really need to kind of change your mindset. And the same thing in old Colorado City and Manitou. There's enough going on, which is the best part of all of this, in our little districts that you really need to be prepared to park and walk, or park and get on a bike ride, or park and get on a scooter, but see a little bit more of the street than just the parking spot and the shop right in front of you.
Yeah, and if it really bothers you to pay to park, then ride your bike or ride the bus.
Yeah, there are lots of options.
Yeah, you do not have to drive your car into downtown Colorado Springs.
But it is very exciting. Like you were also saying, we're all on our phones all the time, let's be real. So having that option to tap to pay, text to pay, and they all have that extension option too. So where when you're plugging with quarters, you've put in your 1 hour and 36 minutes, and then you need to watch your phone because it doesn't have a way to get back in touch with you. And you've got to run back out. Maybe you're at a movie, maybe you're shopping, eating, et cetera. But any of these digital ways, you can get a reminder. And it's usually a 15-minute reminder. Mm-hmm. And from the app, you can add another half hour. Dessert hasn't come yet, or I just ordered a martini, and I still need another 36 minutes.
Or this date, this blind date is going better than I thought.
Exactly, exactly. So what they've really done is try to meet us where we are, make sure there's convenience. And anywhere there are still meters, you can still plug them with coins. You can still use your credit card in them. I'm not sure you can put coins in the kiosk. You can definitely do credit cards in the kiosk, but all new ways, plus some of the old ways still too.
Now, I don't probably need to ask this now that meters are going away in a lot of places, but I'm hoping you might know the answer. I've at times put a dime into a meter and it just stayed at zero.
That's because it requires quarters.
Dimes are worthless. Well,
yeah, I'm guessing they're thinking a dime, that gives you 10 seconds. So
it doesn't take dimes. It takes quarters.
It doesn't tell you that.
It does take dimes. It doesn't take nickels.
Yes. Yeah, okay. I think dimes are supposed to get you like 6 minutes.
Yes.
And sometimes there will be just a malfunctioning meter and all the meters are numbered. And I believe there's a phone number listed on them where if you have a malfunctioning meter and you've plugged in a dime or even multiple quarters and it hasn't registered, you can call the number. If it's not personed at the time, I believe you can leave a phone number. I'd always take a picture at that point. And that way, if you end up with a ticket, you can say, I put 50 cents in. I didn't get any time. I tried to call the number. No one answered. You have a lot more leverage to fight a ticket if you get it that way. And they're generally super reasonable about that. They understand that sometimes the technology fails. But there's a woman named Alyssa over at Parking Enterprise who I just think is one of the most friendly, amazing people. Every time I've reached out to her with a question, she has so much information and she's the one that actually sent out all the new updates and I think held the press release on it. And I'm just really excited kind of, it's so weird to say that out loud. I'm excited to where our Parking Enterprise is going. 10 years ago, I can't imagine that would have been in my vocabulary, but they're really thinking about how to make it easier and how to make it just part of our daily life.
It does feel a lot more modern around here.
And it is very easy. I use that app like it's going out of style.
Yep. Me too.
All right. That's a wrap. So explore all the great community podcasts at studio809podcast.com and support us, please, by clicking Become a Patron at the top of our homepage. Thanks a lot for listening and for loving the springs. Hi, I'm Dave Gardner, Chief Podcast Wrangler at Studio 809 Podcasts. We're a collective of podcasters here in the Pikes Peak region committed to having local residents who are better informed and more engaged. You know, most of us volunteer our time. Nobody's really earning any wages working on these podcasts. This is a gift to the community. And one way you can say thank you is to become a patron, providing a little support to help us cover our expenses. You can easily do that by heading over to studio809podcasts.com and clicking on the patron button in the upper right corner. Thanks so much for supporting community.
In the Pikes Peak region, there's no shortage of activities. Whether you're experiencing breathtaking parks or magnificent works of art, if you're getting fashionable at a film festival, or fresh at a farmer's market, if you want to hear the sweet sounds of a symphony or the smooth shred of a Stratocaster, look no further than Peak Radar, your one-stop shop for all events in the Pikes Peak region, your free source for viewing and posting events. So no matter how you engage with our beautiful region, visit peakradar.com and get plugged into the peak.